Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, the snap legislative elections called by Emmanuel Macron in France will start this Sunday, and whatever happens, it'll go down as one of the wildest gambles in modern French history. Plus, it's given the far right its best shot at governing France for the first time since the Vichy regime, which collaborated with Nazi Germany in the Second World War. That's according to my next guest, Cole Stangler, journalist and author. Cole, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You've written in optimistic terms about France in your book, but in the New York Times, perhaps less optimistically.
Yes, that's right. I think, you know, like many in France, I was quite surprised by this announcement by President Macron to call for these snap legislative elections. And like you said, the polls right now do have the far right ahead. It's important to keep in mind this is a two-round election. We have the first round on Sunday, the second round after that. So there's still a lot of uncertainty. But for now, if you look at the polls, it's quite clear. Right now, the far right is leading, and we may even see an absolute majority formed by the far right, led by Jordan Bardella, who's the new leader, the prime minister in waiting of this party founded by Jean-Marie Le Pen and led most recently by Marine Le Pen, his daughter.
And how are the elections structured? You say it's in two rounds, but for people unfamiliar with the French elections, in brief, how do they work?
So France has what's known as a semi-presidential system. So Macron will remain president. You know, he didn't have to call these snap elections. Typically, since recent constitutional reforms, the legislature serves five-year terms along with the president. So we had elections slated for 2027. Macron is bringing that timeline up. So essentially these two rounds, you have, if no candidate gets 50% in the first round, more than 50% and above a certain level of participation, you have a second round. That's what we'll expect to see in most cases. And in that second round, depending on, again, the participation levels, we may have anywhere from two to three candidates competing in that second round. And that's where it's going to get very interesting. Like I said, the far right is slightly ahead in the polls, but you also have a left-wing bloc that's quite strong. Right now, we're at around 36% for the far right, around 30% for the left-wing bloc. And then the Macronist coalition is well below that, around 19% or so. So we could be moving toward a scenario in which you have, in many races, of these 577 seats in the National Assembly, scenarios in which you have three candidates, and what will the Macronists do if they're behind both the far right and the left? Historically in France, you have this tradition of what's known as the Republican Front, of candidates across the political spectrum joining forces to deny chances of victory to the far right. That's what we saw famously in 2002 against the National Front. With Jean-Marie Le Pen, it's what we saw in 2017 with Macron, it's what we saw in 2022. But we're now in an era in which, frankly, this idea of the Republican Front is becoming harder and harder to maintain. And so, again, you know, I don't want to speculate too much. We have to see how this first round plays out on Sunday. But
right.
But we're in a very unprecedented situation.
Tactically, is Macron guilty of fighting the last election? He may have been confident because of last time he went head-to-head with Le Pen and beat her roundly in debates on the facts. But he's not fighting Le Pen this time. The National Front, or the Rassemblement National, this time around, is led by Jordan Bardella, who's younger, who's more media savvy, and who may just be a better debater.
Yeah, well, you know, Bardella is someone who is, you know, in many ways, you know, the perfect kind of candidate for the RN. He's young, as you mentioned. He grew up himself in the suburbs of Paris in Saint-Saint-Denis. So he likes to talk about how he grew up among immigrants. And he doesn't carry as much of the same baggage. But again, we're talking about the image. And if you look at the actual policy proposals, if you look at what the program of the National Rally says, if you kind of go beyond the way that they're changing the discourse, the way they speak about these issues, the program itself, there's not a lot that has changed. And in fact, I would even say if you look at the program, immigration is sort of the one constant of this party, opposition to immigration. And there are a number of proposals that quite frankly, it's not my opinion, I think anyone who knows the history of the French Republic would say so. These are proposals that are at odds with what we call the French Republican tradition in a number of respects.
And not just immigration, Islamic immigration and even people who aren't recent arrivals, people who may be Muslims living in France.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know, at the core, to give you some of these examples of what I'm talking about, one of the cornerstones of the National Rally program is removing, getting rid of what we call the droit du sol, birthright citizenship in France, this idea that if you're born on French soil, even if your parents are foreigners, if both parents are foreigners, you have the ability to acquire French nationality. This is something that has been around in France for centuries, with some exceptions, but for centuries. Not even the Vichy regime that you mentioned early on got rid of this birthright citizenship. That's what the National Rally wants to do. That's quite a radical proposal at odds with French history. Another very radical proposal is their aim to restrict certain jobs in France to prohibit dual nationals from holding certain jobs in France. And again, if you actually look at what that means, that's a radical proposal. What they're proposing is creating essentially different levels of French citizenship, which is not something that exists currently. If you look at a proposal from Marine Le Pen's party in the National Assembly just a few weeks ago, they talked about denying jobs in the public sector to dual nationals, so even if they're French citizens. That, again, is a radical proposal. And, of course, we have other proposals about deporting undocumented immigrants.
Sure. And when you put all of those things together and you get opposition to Jordan Bardella coming from the likes of Kylian Mbappe, a prominent French citizen of immigrant heritage, you would think it may be an easy prospect to beat them. But Macron is not doing well in the polls. Why and how badly?
Well, you know, like I said, the polls have Macron's party behind the two camps here, the far right and the left. I think if you look at the way Macron has governed, and you have your answers there. You know, on the one hand, we've seen economic policies that have led to him being accused of being the president of the rich. That's kind of a name that stuck with him. So opposing hikes in the minimum wage, moving for having tax cuts for the super rich, not investing enough in public services, all that economic policy, which, again, is quite popular in the EU outside of France, hasn't played well, I think, understandably, for a lot of working class, low to middle income voters in France. That's part of it. If you look at also Macron's attempts to kind of play on the National Rally's terrain by talking about issues like immigration and French national identity, that hasn't benefited Macron either. There's a very famous quote that Jean-Marie Le Pen, the founder of the National Front, used to say, which is that voters always prefer the original to the copy. And I think that's what we have on our hands here. You have, when the government tries to play on the National Front's terrain, it actually just reinforces the sense that actually the National Rally is right. Again, I want to be clear too that there's another camp which we haven't talked about left.
That was going to be my next one, because they are calling themselves the Popular Front, which is reminiscent of Léon Blum's Popular Front of the 1930s. It's sending a clear message to the public that what's at stake here is effectively French political culture. You can either rescue French democracy or you can go back to what's implicitly a kind of a collaborationist reactionary movement.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of framing it. This is a nod to that 1936 coalition, the Popular Front, that came together because the left was very alarmed, concerned about the prospects of fascism in France. We're in a very different context today. I don't want to draw simplistic parallels, but the far right, you know, is on the verge of winning power. And so the question today is how much can the left mobilize and convince people beyond its base? I think it's clear now. You have this left-wing unity that's been able to increase its share of the vote in the polls that has it actually competing with the far right. The question is, how does the left go beyond its electorate of a lot of working class immigrants in cities, people of immigrant descent living in cities, a lot of urban voters, immigrant and non-immigrant, tend to vote for the left, but they've struggled outside of these urban areas. And so the question, again, is without speculating too much, is what's going to happen when the country wakes up on Monday and sees the far right, probably in the lead after the first round? Is that going to be enough to kind of shock, you know, elements of Macron's party to actually decide to join forces with the left and create something actually more similar to the Popular Front that we saw in the 1930s? Or Are they going to essentially decide, continue to say that the left is just as dangerous? Again, some people have said that, just as dangerous as the far right, and therefore there's no reasonable option here. Right. There's, again, a lot of unanswered questions.
And how united, you say, you know, it's a unity front from the left, but how united is that?
You know, there's some tensions, but not many more than even the last time we saw the left unite for legislative elections back in 2022. The issue for the left is that, when you don't have unity, it creates the opponents have seized on that. It's created kind of a lot of noise in the press when there hasn't been that unity. And you also have one figure on the left who's quite a polarizing, unpopular figure, Jean-Luc Mélenchon. And both the far right and the Macronist party have not hesitated to sort of tie the entire left coalition to this one figure, Mélenchon, even if he's only a part of it. Right. So I think all that hasn't benefited, yeah.
All right, and briefly and finally, call it, who's going to win?
Oh, I can't do that. I think we'll see what happens after the first round. So many unanswered questions. We might not have anyone with an absolute majority. And again, just uncharted territory.
Okay. Cole Stangler, thanks very much for that. US journalist and author based in France. The name of his book is Paris Is Not Dead, Surviving Hyper-Gentrification in the City of Light. Now, coming up, Irish People Who Shape for Good or for Ill the British Empire, a new podcast series with A.B. Philbin Bowman. That's next.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.